morning to all of you folks, and thank you committee members for being here, as well as the public. So I'd like to have, for the public's interest, us introduce ourselves. I'm Bob Gunther, I chair this subcommittee.
Tom Nelson, public member.
Good morning, Dave Ferreira, general public member.
Jeff Davis, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Paula Swedeen, general public member.
Mark Engel, DNR, staff to the committee.
Thank you. So on the agenda at 9:05, we have, I'm sorry. Are we okay?
I think it was just a cup moving on the table.
I thought maybe we had to do some safety work here for a minute, or do we? Do we have to do the safety?
Good morning, welcome to the Natural Resources Building. At this time, please silence any noise-making devices you have. In the event of an emergency, please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can, or go under a table. In the event of any emergency, the lights will and the alarm will sound and flash, and in the event of evacuation, when we evacuate, follow staff out these doors here and we'll go out towards Jefferson Street along the grassy area, and there we are equipped to help you with any emergency you have. Thank you.
Thank you. So on the agenda, we have the approval of the July 17th minutes of this committee. Any discussion, or can I have a motion and then we can discuss it?
I move to approve the meeting minutes.
So I'd like to open up the discussion, please.
Yeah, as staff, one thing that we noticed that we need to add to the meeting minutes for all of the meetings is that all of the presentations that people give to the committee are posted with this committee, so all that material is available. The minutes refer to these presentations. We staff ask that you approve that we just indicate that the materials are posted. That way people, when they read the minutes, like for example the anadromous fish floor presentation, they know where to look to see that presentation.
Any comments on that, on the minutes?
Mr. Chair, maybe just a question. So if I'm picking up what you're laying down, there's a link on the notes, the meeting notes, and that captures what you just said?
Well, I think we should actually indicate which ones are actually posted so that people, when they're reading the minutes, that they're told that they can find them and look at them. Each presentation, because there's been an awful lot of presentations in all four of these meetings, and you have to take that as a whole, along with all the meeting minutes, to review the materials that have been brought forward to the committee.
You know, any other discussions on the minutes? Items that you'd like to discuss? Would you like to take a couple minutes and take a look? Thank you.
So there is part of the discussion that I don't think is reflected in these notes that I think is pretty important, and that's that it appears that the way that the tribes had analyzed the gradient threshold and the way the landowners did in their presentation, or WFPA did in their presentation, was different, which means it's really hard to compare the results, and that needed to be addressed in the work that the technical committee was done. And it was a point that I raised, and I don't see it reflected here in the notes.
Okay. So would you like to insert that in the notes, or do you have some language that you would like to put into the notes along in regard to that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, maybe right above, maybe at the end of the summary here. Well, I can't remember if the discussion was after public comment or before public comment. And so maybe if someone can go back and listen to that, but the language would just be that, you know, committee members, or you can use my name if you want to, noted that it appears that the tribes and the landowners used different ways to measure the gradient threshold, and that in order to have useful comparisons, that needs to be reconciled.
Okay. Have you got that, Patricia?
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Other comments on the minutes? We have a motion and a second on the floor. Hearing none, I would call for the vote. All those in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Well, and is that included?
As amended.
Yes, included as amended.
As amended,
okay.
As amended.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried as amended. Okay. So we're pretty much on schedule here. On 9:10, we have public comment with Base PHP. We have someone that's signed up. Chris Mendoza. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, and good morning, board members. My comment today is indirectly related to the topic of discussion that you're dealing with. It mainly has to do with the PHP validation study and the other studies associated with the line item that you're currently trying to fill in the budget. The default fiscal criteria project, the LIDAR project, and this is just sort of a heads up for your August meeting that there's been considerable debate, and I signed up as a CEMER co-chair representing the Conservation Caucus about whether those studies will in fact come to CEMER. I know that you've already had CEMER weigh in on the PHP validation study. You've got a comment matrix from CEMER members and so forth, but the question remains still, at least, whether those other two studies will come to us. At present, we're assuming no. If they do come to CEMER, then through a formal motion in August, then we'll be prepared to deal with those, depending on whether and if they get funded accordingly. So I mainly want to just let you know what was going on with the CEMER end of the Adaptive Management Program, that we have a subcommittee that's reviewed those reports and sort of, we'll just say, waiting in the wings to determine whether, you know, at some point we get handed those studies from the board. If not, that's your purview, of course, but we're ready to deal with them if they come to us at some point. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. So we only had one person sign up, so that's the public comment on the agenda.
Steve, would it be, I'm sorry, I missed the sign-up sheet. Could I?
Sure.
Morning. Jamie Glasgow, Conservation Caucus. Just on the topic of width-based criteria for PHVs, I wanted to just give a quick reminder about the PHV science panel, which the state commissioned to evaluate a lot of data on existing water type mods that have been approved. And and what physical characteristics might help us understand where those points lie on the landscape. And they looked specifically at width and concluded, and I'm just going to read from the report, that the PHB criteria for tributaries of type F waters or laterals start at the most downstream end of the tributary junction, and changes or thresholds associated with the PHB criteria be measured upstream from that location, which is to say that the width criteria that they analyzed applied within a stream channel, a terminal change within a stream channel, not comparing a main stem to a tributary, for example. I feel like that idea, that concept, it's very clear in their report, and I think we pressed them on that issue after the report came out, and they held their ground pretty well. I think they had something like 10,000 years of collective experience between them. Maybe not quite that much, but...
Old, really old men.
Yes. I feel like that's a really important point, and I didn't want us to forget, because we all have invested a lot of resources, financial and time, in that effort, and that was a specific conclusion that they reached.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, are we ready to move on? Unless there's someone else that missed signing, would like to testify. Okay. So we need to discuss the next steps. Board approved the PHB for each option. We need to clarify the intent of option C with the base PHB. Should the committee recommend board approval of amended with PHB for option C and the spatial analysis on the PHB? So what's the next steps? What's your pleasure? Where are we at?
Well, I'm not sure personally that the sub-bullets are both necessary. Clarify the intent of option C with base PHB. I think we've been over that several times. And whether or not it needs an amendment, I don't think it needs an amendment, because in my mind it was always intended that way. It just was never analyzed that way by DNR and others. So I'm not sure that there's an amendment needed. I think that's kind of a bad word to use in there, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we can clarify the intent if you want to spend some time on that, but I think we went over that last time with Darren's presentation and Brian Francis. So, I'm not. What are we doing here? Are we supposed to? Are we making a recommendation here? Are we going to discuss this some more? Or what are we doing?
Well, I think that we need to be clear as to what our next move is for report to the board. And so that's what I'm trying to tease out here from you folks is what do we report to the board on this subject?
Well, I personally think that the whole board needs to hear at least summaries of everything we've heard here. I don't feel like we can screen through this and recommend to the board without them having the full information. If I were not on the committee but on the board, I would want to know all the stuff that we've heard here, at least summarized.
I definitely think that's a good idea, and that's kind of one of the things that I'm looking for. Other comments from committee members, please.
So I guess I wonder why we exist if all the information and all the time that we are spending in these meetings needs to then go to the full board.
Well, I think I heard Tom say at least a summary.
Well, if the board is going to vote, the full board is going to vote on putting these options forward in some format to be analyzed and to go into rule language, they need to know all the information that we know if they're going to vote on. I mean, there have been new things that came in, the Skagit project that came in for the anadromous floor, they've never seen that. I would think they would at least want to see a summary of stuff like that before they voted on it. I would if I were not on the committee. That's all I'm saying. They don't have to have the full 16-hour presentation of all this stuff with charts of graphs, you know, but I think they need to see a summary of at least the concepts that we've gone over.
So, if we're making a recommendation, I think a summary just supports what that recommendation is so they know where we're coming from. It's relatively concise.
Mark and I talked earlier about the possibility of doing a, presentation on the screen so that folks can see the information that we saw, or at least a summary of the information. So do a PowerPoint to that effect. Does that make sense to you folks?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you, Board Member Nelson, raised the question of, does the language describing the option need to change or need to be amended? And I thought I remembered, at least from the first meeting, that Mark, we pulled up the language and looked at it, and Mark described how using a tributary junction was possible, but it wasn't the only way you do it, and that you could also measure width, like within the channel.
Right.
And so what we heard Brian say was that no, it was always intended just to be a tributary junction. And so if that's the case, then I would think that the language would need to be amended, because that doesn't, that I think the current rule language and what the board approved, even after that series of going back to all the stakeholder groups and saying, is this what you want, that is not what came out at our first subcommittee meeting. So it's what was proposed to us as what the landowners wanted is different than what's reflected in the current draft rule language. Right? Am I summarizing that correctly?
I think so from my perspective. So we're in that, this is just my interpretation. I feel like the board advanced the three proposals based on some general understanding around them. I think through time, maybe we got a little bit more clarity around option C. I feel like I definitely heard a lot more clarity in this committee. And so I don't know, what I don't know, is it a recommendation to change the option? I feel like it's more what I heard you say, Tom, of I think the full board needs the clarity of what that we have now around that option C and how it was always intended to be applied or analyzed by the developers of that proposal. I'll say what I've been saying through time. Width alone is problematic for me from a fish perspective. And then looking back through time, there's the accessibility piece too. And I think, Tom, you've been a champion for that message about, hey, can fish get there? And then width alone doesn't really drive that, thinking about the flow and the habitat characteristics gradient as being bigger drivers. So I still sit in the space of being a little bit worried about, are we analyzing all three under similar criteria, or are we analyzing two under a criteria and one under a different criteria? And then how at the end of the day, is the board going to have concrete information from which to make a decision? And I'm a little bit worried about that.
So I hear a few different points, or at least two different points in there that I think need to be untangled. And one is, as an actual PHB, is width appropriate? So we've constructed these options that all of the PHBs are for, right? So when you start looking for your first PHB, like in the list that comprises each option, the first one you encounter, no matter what it is where you start electrofishing. So that does mean that if width is there, you can use width alone. And what you're saying is you don't think width alone is a good one.
Yeah.
So that's one topic on yes. like how we've actually constructed the options around PHBs. And then the second one is an accuracy, a measurement thing, right? So if we're going to, because you mentioned analyzing them differently, so A and B have absolute width, mm-hmm. and that's hard to measure. And so the analysis is going to suffer from an accuracy perspective. If we use, as was recommended by the landowner caucus, if we use tributary junctions for width, there's going to be a higher level of accuracy for that one and not for the other two. And so the comparison or the analysis really isn't going to be equal across all of them. Right? So those are two different
yes.
points. And I think those are both important for us to wrestle with, and you know, whether or not we make a concrete recommendation to the full board or just say these are the issues that we discovered and the board has to decide. That's we could go either route.
Mm-hmm. I agree with what you said. I would add one thing. It's not just the accuracy for analysis that has the problems with without going to the tributary by taking mm-hmm. 70 or 80%. Mm-hmm. It's also the part that bothers me is the enforceability. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you go out and you'll have endless arguments about where 70% of the width or 80% on the channel mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. but if you go to a tributary, there really shouldn't be any argument. To me, the enforceability is the other part of it that makes it. If we're going to write a rule for this and it's going to be enforceable, I think there's a big attraction to going to a tributary because it's a fixed place. You can map it more accurately and you can enforce it more accurately. Mm-hmm. But I agree with everything else you said. But to me, it goes back to we're talking about clarifying, not really amending, and that's the only thing. The two are, I think you need one or the other. Put on here.
Other comments? David, any comments there?
I was trying to recall the expert panel we had commissioned and how they addressed the use of width. And I think my recollection is they were recommending against using width as a PHB, and maybe that's by itself, but there was, I think they were pretty firm about that, was my recollection.
Okay. The 10,000 year panel?
The 10,000 year panel.
Well, I think we've, you know, certainly, got a lot more information than we had before we started these committee meetings. We want to make sure, in my opinion, that we share as much as we can within the time that we have with the board so that they can make an informed decision.
Well, and the point that Jamie made about, you know, there was strong language in the technical team report about not using tributary junctions to measure PHBs, and then there was a minority report from the scientist that was representing the landowners. And I think that's another thing that I'm struggling with a little bit. And at the prior meeting, I think my position was, well, if that's the option that the landowners want, then it should, and it hadn't been clearly articulated before, then let's get on with it and analyze it. But at the same time, now I'm thinking about the fact that if it's if most of the other scientists said that it's actually not a good idea to apply a PHB at a tributary junction, it makes me a little uncomfortable as a board member to move ahead doing that. And then the question becomes, is that meeting the intent of the rule, which was to, one of the intents of the rule was to minimize electroshocking? And so I still think we're wrapping back around that issue, and it's a hard one. And to me, the question is, you know, there were three options. They originated from different caucuses. Do we just say, okay, go ahead and analyze things, the way now that the caucus is saying they want to, but then that analysis would require recognition that there's, you know, a good chunk of the vast majority of the technical team and the science that they cited, you know, recommended against doing that. And so if we're going to analyze it, then the risks to not finding fish or the risks to not reducing electrofishing need to be incorporated into the analysis. Or the other thing is, since there's queasiness about using width at all, do we drop width from all of the PHVs? I mean, from all the options. So again, it's treated equally. And I'm a little chagrined because it feels like we're going backwards instead of forwards in terms of clarity on what to do. But these are kind of thorny issues.
Well, I understand width is pretty tough to measure across the landscape. So that is a thorny issue from my perspective. But I think one of the things we should do is make sure, as I said earlier, that the board has the information in a summary of what we've wrestled with here. Maybe there's someone there that has a better idea.
I feel like part of our struggle in all of this is the things that are at stake. Paula, I've appreciated you in particular, like, pushing to get clarity of understanding of option C and being a champion for, yeah, let's analyze that as an agency that's heavily dependent on the timber industry and small forest land owners being successful and staying on the ground. The economics is important, I know, to all of us. There's the salmon recovery and the treaty rights as part of this. And so it shouldn't be a mystery why this is really hard and why it's taken so long. I've been pretty concerned about width alone, and I think I even, as part of a board discussion, mentioned that width should be and some other, because it's really the physical and the gradient that are, you know, the physical barrier or the gradient that are bigger drivers than a width, especially at this scale. We're talking statewide or west side rules. I don't know how to, like, recommend any movement forward in that, you know, from my perspective, dropping width from all of them might allow a better comparison of the alternatives as part of the analysis. But I'm looking to you, Mark. We heard from everyone, including Brian, that width is hard to capture in these analyses, and that's why, what I heard anyway, was that's why he went to tributary junctions, because that's a little easier to see from the sky, if you will. And then there's the accessibility piece too, right? And so I'm a little bit worried on the fish side of this about calling a trib junction a PHB, because Paula, I've heard you say, and I've said it too, about the seasonality and the risk. All those words aren't helped in this conversation, but I think it's important that we just lay on the table why this is hard too. There's a lot at stake for everyone, and we got to do the best we can to resolve these issues and at least help the full board understand, maybe with a little more clarity, why it's so hard and what we've learned in this committee.
Well, whatever we recommend to the full board, I think we're about at the point where we need to inform the full board that there will have to be some sort of balance of risk here, because there is no perfect rule that will work correctly in every instance. But we've been trying to get at the most accurate and the most science-based approach that we can get to that will work most of the time. And it will balance the risk between going going too far or not going far enough. I mean, that's really what where we're at in my mind. And I don't, you know, we're not going to come up with whether we use width plus gradient plus something else. We can add several more variables to it, but there's still going to be statistics around the accuracy no matter what we do. There's no way around that. We're going to have to try to get as close as we can that's still able to be implemented on the ground and enforced on the ground and balances the risk between the people who own the land and the people who are looking out for the other resources. I think that's where we are.
Well, I think that's the intent of all the options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the intent of the analysis, both the cost-benefit analysis and the SEPA analysis, is to try to figure out which of those options does the best job of all of those things. You know, and then, like, I went back and read the motion from a few years ago that clarified the intent of the rulemaking, like what it is we're trying to accomplish. And I think those criteria are important for us to remember in all of this, you know, and meeting the intent of, I mean, meeting the intent of the rule, right? And that's the other part of it, the intent of the rule and the intent of the HCP. So, and I think we as the board developed three options that we thought captured the range of what could do that, right? And so, like, that's where we started. DNR started down the road of analysis. There were issues that I think were both issues of timing and communication, but then also just technical issues of how you measure one of those PHPs. And I don't know that we're recommending or that we would recommend adding a whole bunch more, but it might be combining them in a different way, or it might be dropping one of them. And I wonder what it would, you know, I feel like I should have come into this morning like rereading the technical report, right, to be able to say, hey, you know, this is exactly what they said about width, and you know, maybe we should look at this other option. And I haven't. We could take a break so we could all do it and bring it up and think about it. I mean, cause I feel like it's punting a little bit for us just to go to the full board and say, you know, we clarified some issues, but we really have no idea what to do. I would like to see if we could come up with something a little bit more definitive. And it's not, I mean, it's just a recommendation, right? I mean, the full board still has to vote, and the full board could say, you know, thanks for your recommendation, but we don't agree, or there could be more discussion with everybody in there, or we could, ask the authors of the technical team for, we could ask, pose them a couple questions and have them come back to us with some answers, not a full analysis, but just, you know, for instance, we could say, hey, you know, what did you think about using width alone? And, you know, can you interpret based on, you know, all of those tables what it would mean if we either dropped width or if we combined it with something else? And then so the rule proposal would be, and then we would have to treat all three of them the same way, I would think, is that width would have to be in combination with something else.
Well, there's something else we talked about last meeting that I'd like to follow up on, and that's there are two separate instances where the data doesn't jive. You already mentioned one. I think we need to at least inform the board and do some more work on how the gradient was measured in 30-meter increments in the tribal study versus how it was measured in the spatial analysis that the landowners did for the anadromous floor. Mm-hmm. Those two need to be mm-hmm. kind of worked yeah. out a little. That's one. Mm-hmm. And the second one is the landowners did all that analysis with Lee Benda and others on the spatial analysis for the PHPs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't jive with what DNR did because mm-hmm. DNR didn't know they were going to the TRIBS. I would like to see DNR go to the TRIBS and see why, and hopefully those numbers would be about the same or much closer once they did the analysis. That would be very helpful to me as far as what are the effects and what are the accuracy.
Yeah, but I think we have this more basic question. I mean, I think that's a lot of work for DNR to do, to, you know, reanalyze reanalyze the options using the trim junction, it sounds to me like we're back at a more basic question of whether or not we think the options as we've approved them for DNR to analyze is actually what we want. Because of the issue of, I mean, I think we've heard loud and clear that what the landowner's proposing is to use trim junctions, and then we've heard from the science team, don't use trim junctions, and so that's an issue, right? And the rule language sort of allowed for it when it made sense, but it wasn't like you're always going to use it. And so now we're faced with this issue of, do we have an option that actually goes contrary to the scientific advice that we got?
Other comments?
I think I agree with what Paul is articulating. We have three different options, and there's supposed to be an analysis of all three, and including width and trip junctions makes it impossible to analyze all three against each other, then I think that's an issue we should figure out how to resolve.
I'm unclear. Why does it make something impossible to analyze?
I think it's like being able to have equal accuracy for the analysis across the two, because being able to analyze a two foot width is difficult enough.
Right.
And now the way that it's been proposed that width be measured in option C with the trip junction is it. It's possible to analyze that with a higher level of accuracy
right.
than it is the other two. And so you're going to have more uncertainty and less accuracy in the results, and then all the numbers that are crunched on top of the GIS analysis. And so, I mean, that was your all's concern, I mean, the landowner's concern from the beginning. It's like, hey, you didn't analyze our option the right way, and so you're not going to get good numbers. So now we might have a way of doing that accurately for option C if you were to use trip junctions, but the accuracy for the other two is going to be less. I worry, I don't know if there's APA implications, and so I'm looking to our attorney for that, but we're essentially going to have an unequal analysis based on accuracy of understanding how they play out on the ground between the three options.
If I may add, please.
Mm-hmm.
So what the landowners now with the trips where we can measure based on basin size and precipitation difference in flow, that's not width. Okay, so we could do that now based on a reduction in flow of a trip from the main stem, but we still face the issue for PHB options A and B of actually identifying where the stream is 2 foot wide, and that's the problem. We can't really see width for any of them. There are some modeling where you can see a change in overall width, but you don't really know exactly what the width is. So what we would gain is based on flow. Could start to calculate the 20% reduction, but we still cannot see width. So that would, therein lie, would be the inequity. We'd resolve one PHB, but not the other two. We still don't have them all on equal analysis. And again, as you said earlier, you could have a 2 foot wide stream that's 3 feet deep, and you'll see the volume associated with that, or you could have a 2 foot wide that's 1 inch deep, and that's an entirely different volume. So you just don't know when you hit that 2 foot wide threshold.
So the issue that we're discussing is the discrepancy between the three options as far as accuracy.
As far as the analytical accuracy for being able to do the CEPA analysis and the cost benefit analysis.
Right.
Okay.
Pick the most accurate one.
Might be accurate on the ground. That's the difference, right? You can measure 2 feet on the ground.
Well, I mean, I don't know how, unless we want to put a bunch more study into it to get the accuracy up to the other options, what other options do we have?
Drop width as a PHP, based on his concerns.
But then we lose the accuracy we've already plugged into it.
No, then the other two, I mean, if you drop width from all of the options and you use the other PHPs, and we're not talking, and you know, based on what Jeff was raising, as his concern about width alone not being a good PHP, but that's how we've constructed the option, is that you can use width alone as a PHP. And so we could reformulate all three options to drop width out of all three of them and just use the other two criteria, the other two PHP criteria.
But the landowner's option is not just the width-based. It's also talking about the gradient, and it talks about barriers.
Exactly.
So it's not just width-based. So that option would get, you take width out of that?
Right, but all the options are constructed such that whichever PHP you encounter first is the one that you start electrofishing of. Mm-hmm. So essentially, if you hit, and the way that you guys have articulated the way you want it, if you hit that reduction of 20% at a trib junction first, the other two PHPs don't matter, right? And so it does essentially become a width-alone PHP. And it's the same with the others. If you hit 2 feet before you hit any of the others, then that's what you're using as your PHP. And so for equal treatment and for addressing the issue that width-alone may not be a good PHP, we could do it a couple different ways. One would be make it width plus one of the others, so width and has to be width and gradient, or width and a natural barrier, or not have width at all and just use the other two that were in it.
The problem I have with this is that we decided that we had three different options we identified to do this, and we still haven't even talked, we haven't even begun talking about the east side. But we had these three options that we were going to analyze, and now we're talking about taking one of those options that was brought forward and us modifying it. I mean, I don't think the landowners are going to like that option without the width-based one. I don't. That wasn't what was proposed, so like we can do anything we want, but I think we're going down the wrong road if we start picking and plucking and modifying the options that were brought forward that we said we were going to analyze. It's just my opinion.
No, I mean, it's understandable, and I think we're in this position because we got a new understanding based on discussions in front of this subcommittee, and so it's just presenting us with some conundrums.
Well, again, that goes back to communication, because the original paper that came in with the spatial analysis that Karen wrote had this stuff in there. So it was a question of how this was communicated throughout the process. But that was always in there. It was always analyzed. The first spatial analysis I saw the landowners do had defaulted to tributaries because they couldn't figure out how to figure out 80% or 70% of the width differential. So yes, it's just now being discovered and put in here, but it's always been there.
Yeah, and I guess and I can't attest to why that wasn't understood before. I don't know why.
It doesn't matter. It's here now. We all understand it. Now we need to figure out where to go.
Right.
And as you know, when we were appointed on this committee, collaboration was stated many times.
Cooperation, remember? I don't collaborate.
So I think that we've worked towards that, and we're wrestling with a problem here. We've got to figure out a solution for a recommendation. I think that I think we've hammered on this and haven't reached consensus here amongst us. But we do have folks in the room that may be able to give us some guidance. I don't know. What's proper here?
I wonder if we can take a break.
Sure.
For a few minutes.
I can go get some more coffee from the cafeteria.
Too. No, that's fine. No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Because we, I'm kind of stuck.
Yeah, I know. I think we all are.
Let's, 10 minutes.
10 minutes to right on the hour, okay? Is that all? Members?
Before you go to the next topic, I dug out my ancient history here, and I beg to differ with a couple of the points that were made about the landowner option not having the stream junction and the scientists. The scientists analyzed their test 15, as they called it, which is the landowner option. Mm-hmm. So it's always been in there, number one, and number two, it's always had the stream junction, and they analyzed it, and the accuracy ratings are in here from the January report. They've got very high accuracy ratings, obviously. So I'm not quite sure why we're talking about throwing part of this out, because I don't think it's accurate to say that the scientists didn't like the width space, because they analyzed it and it got very high accuracy ratings. I'm confused. Okay.
So in the, that's the January that you're looking at?
Both January and July, test 15 was the landowner option. And in the January report, it shows the 5% gradient, the stream junction at both a ratio of 7 and 0.7 and 0.8. It shows the obstacle criteria. And then it shows the science panel alternative, which is January test 15 recommendation. And it shows 90% accuracy of surveyor and PHB, 4% stop. I mean, all the analysis is there, and it got some of the highest accuracy ratings. So I don't know why this theme of the scientists don't like this is out there. That's why I'm confused.
So if you're talking theme on the width, they have inside their report, I think it's on page 5, it says, we're not aware of any data which clearly show that a 2-foot bank full width threshold in the absence of other criteria such as channel gradient or pool frequency accurately reflects the boundary of fish distribution in Washington State streams.
Right.
Like even Brian's work looked at a mean annual flow of 1 CFS.
Right.
And there's another, like further down, it says that likelihood of trout presence declined with increase in channel gradient, decreased pool abundance, and decreased channel width across all sites combined, though trout presence was not related to channel width in unlogged sites. So, and I remember asking this question of the science team, you know, when we were looking at the tables, right? Because it's kind of confusing. It's like, are these ands across, you know, is the accuracy mean, like when they analyzed what they analyzed there with all of the different criteria, was it a combination of the three or was it any one? And I seem to remember their answer being a little like it's both. There's a bit of a contradiction here. And so I think it leaves us all, I mean, I totally hear what you're saying, Tom, and it does look contradictory to have those high accuracy rates and then have this stuff in here that says width alone is not essentially not a good indication of absence of fish.
Maybe I'm the only one, but I feel like we're delving into some minutiae of scientific analysis and talking about making some policy decisions that I'm not terribly comfortable with, to be honest with you.
Other comments, please? You're thinking.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, Tom. And then I'm
speak up a little bit, please.
Especially when you agree with me.
But this may not be one of those times, Tom.
Careful what you ask for.
So a lot of things popping on my radar. There's the how do you not do the analysis of the three alternatives and have two of them be apples and one be an orange? One way that we talked about a little bit is, what if we drop width altogether across all three and we were looking at gradient and a physical barrier? I think those were the two. Science panel says, yeah, that gives you more accuracy from a fish perspective. They talk about how it's challenging. I would like to go and look at that report that you just looked at, because I haven't looked at that in a while, to take a look at the level of accuracy. So then, if you don't drop width, then is there a way to look at the 2-foot width in a way? Were those looked at the same way, in other words? We know they weren't initially, or we know they won't be moving forward based on the clarity we have now. Is there a way to get more accurate on the other two? Because I don't want to sit at the board and have this one's an orange, these two are apples, this one costs less, this one we don't really totally know, and then we're making a decision. And then, by the way, all these have to be aligned with what were the goals and objectives of the rulemaking in the first place, and what does forest and fish agreements say? So I'm a little bit, I don't have a path, obviously, I don't have a proposed solution here, other than I think we're going to be in apples and oranges if we don't figure out the width piece.
Well, the reason I brought up the report is because if we go back to the scientific, the old guys panel that we talked about earlier.
Wise guys. Wise guys.
Smart guys, minus one. The landowner's alternative was put in as test 15 and analyzed by the technical science team. The East Side Tribes was put in as test number 4 and analyzed for accuracy by the science team. I guess what I'm getting to, Jeff, is that we do have apples and oranges because the anadromous flora came in, evolved a little bit differently. It didn't come out of the scientific report. It came out of thinking about the scientific report and coming up with a different. So no matter how you cut it, I think you're going to have the two different things. But the landowner's alternative in its entirety was analyzed by the scientific team, including the width analysis, as test 15. And the East Side Tribes, with I think they had a 2% threshold or a 2-foot threshold, theirs was analyzed as test 4 in there. So we do have that tracking through this.
So I'd like to look at that again and just refresh my memory.
Well, I have the chart here if you want to look at it.
On the anadromous floor piece, though, I don't know what to say. I feel like we've heard from every one of the technical people. If we just got back together, and Brian's been a big champion for the technical people, can make progress in this. My hope in the anadromous floor, and that's a later agenda item, is that we can actually demonstrate that can be successful. And so maybe we won't. I'm hopeful that we won't have apples and oranges in the anadromous floor. And the other thing that we talked about at the board is this committee has an opportunity to demonstrate better cooperation and, man, maybe even look at how we might fix some of these differences between all three and maybe even recommend something that is a better solution moving forward. Now, I know that's way out there, especially how I feel right now. That's way out there. But to date, I feel like we're learning more and we'll get more clarity about the option C.
I'm hoping to move into a dialogue that actually has us trying to figure out some potential solutions moving forward, because right now I feel like it's just, how do we firm up an understanding around the one option and then push that forward? And that doesn't necessarily feel like we're going to create solutions together. I feel like, heaven forbid, we have a vote and the vote isn't consensus, and I don't know that that's the cooperative nature we're hoping to operate under.
Yeah, I don't think that we were assigned to be cooperative, and that's a mission. So we're just wrestling here with rather than drop width, is there a way we can incorporate it into the other two options?
Yeah, so one question that comes to my mind is, can the width, how we measured or analyzed the width previously, be improved on its accuracy so that we don't have a more accurate, potentially more accurate analysis of one option, and then we're comparing that to something that's less accurate.
You're asking about all three options, right?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
We haven't looked into the
accuracy, how to improve the accuracy of the width option for options A and B.
So can we learn from how option I'm constantly reminded that these are the board's options now.
That's
fine. So board option C, can we learn from how that was done and see if there's anything transferable to the other two?
We'd have to look into it. I do not know, because they used flow as a surrogate for width. I don't know how you use flow as a surrogate for 2 foot wide. Yeah, I don't know what that flow would be.
I'm assuming they used a regression curve. We do a similar modeling for culvert sizing when we don't have
I don't know.
Measurements.
The answer is I don't give you a ready. We'd have to look into it. I have no idea.
Okay. I mean, I the width is an issue on its own, and I've been clear as long as I've been on the board in the record about, the gradient and the physical are apparent, measurable, quite a bit of science behind those. The width piece, I'm telling you, folks, I can take you to a trib channel right now that's 10 inches wide and you can't see the bottom of it. It's so full of coho. Now, that's an extreme case, I realize, when I say that. I also want to say that the physicals that we have in place right now were a negotiated deal also. So when we talk shared risk, that I think of those things too. So width alone is a concern. Width on its own as a PHB is a real big concern for me. And I'm saying that, Tom, and also I'm still with the, I want to go back and look at the science team's analysis of those, and thank you for the bringing that to my attention and giving me the numbers so I can hone in on that in all of my spare time.
Well,
summarize the issues that we have right now.
Maybe before we go there too, like I'm admittedly wanting a little bit of clarity of like what do we actually feel like we have to do going back to the board in the August meeting, because there's like a just give us a progress report. I feel like, and maybe a short period of time is good pressure for us or not, I don't know. But I feel like in a few hours, in a few meetings, it's really hard potentially to put something forward that's concrete.
Well, I think that...
we have to make recommendations right now? I don't know.
No, I don't think we have to make recommendations, but we do have to inform the board as to, if there is progress, what that is. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we were tasked with at least two things. One was whether to incorporate the anadromous zone into the analysis of the options. Mm-hmm. And I think we have achieved that much. And then the other was this, which I think is really probably more of a kind of a hyper-legal question about culvert changes that could occur that I think are probably being answered outside of this, what we're doing here anyway. So I think at a minimum, those were the two things that we were tasked with. And then seeing if we could, maybe Jeff said, be able to work together to try to narrow some of their questions here to make the analysis going forward be done efficiently or quickly. So I think we certainly have got at least one thing done.
We were also tasked with trying to figure out this WIP issue because the landowners came to us and said it was not measured, it wasn't analyzed the way they intended it to be analyzed, right?
Yes.
So we got that presentation and we heard a clear articulation of how they wanted it analyzed. And I think what we're grappling with on that in particular, so I agree with your summary, and you know, we will get a presentation on what the sort of ad hoc technical group has gotten to so far and what we want to do with that in terms of the anadromous floor. And so I think, you know, we'll get that before the end of the day today. We'll be able to make a progress report on that. This one, for me, coming into this committee, my expectation was it was a technical issue, right? It was a technical issue. It wasn't measured correctly, or it wasn't analyzed the way it was expected to be analyzed. That we would hear about that would get fixed, and that we could get DNR going on all the requisite paperwork that's needed to file a CR-102, right? And just for me personally, as a board member, like that, it's been important to me, and it's important to the, you know, people I hear from, and the part of the public that depends on me to articulate their perspective at the board, that we keep moving along with the rulemaking process, which means continuing to move along, analyzing the options that we have before us, that, you know, that the board already adopted. So we heard how the proponents of alternative C wanted WIF analyzed. So we have heard that, and it's raised a couple issues. Like, so, you know, what do we do with that, and what are the implications of being able to have a more accurate measure of a width PHB compared to two other options where it is more difficult to measure that accuracy remotely, not on the ground, but remotely. And so what does that mean for our decision-making process? So that's one set of issues. And then the other set of issues that came up is that the way the landowners have clearly articulated how they want their option analyzed runs contrary to what the majority, eight of nine science team members said it should be analyzed. They said don't use tributary junctions as PHBs. And the proponents of alternative C said they want tributary junctions used as the PHB. So to me, that raises another issue that's bigger than just the technical issue of how this gets analyzed in the GIS as an input. It's like, oh, what does that mean for us as a board? Do we go ahead and say, okay, we opened up the floor and to stakeholders and said, you get to articulate your, you get to measure, I mean, you get to propose what you want, and we'll either try to pick one of them, which we failed to do at the meeting in which we did this, and we decided to do three instead. So given that we decided to do three, and one of the proponents was the landowners, do we just go ahead and analyze it the way they want to, sort of regardless of all the other stuff? Either the uncertainty about is with the loan good, the recommendation from the technical team that we commissioned that said don't use tributary junctions as a PHB because the landowners are proposing this, do we just go ahead and analyze it anyway and then analyze the impacts? Can we analyze the impacts accurately of saying, well, you know, you may be actually missing fish if you do this? So do we go ahead and just say, okay, this is what they wanted, we're going to analyze it, or do we say, we as a board, is this like, no, we're worried that this isn't actually going to accomplish the goals of the rulemaking or protect fish the way it's supposed to, so we can't accept this, so we need to modify it. We invited the proposal, we as the board need to make a decision to modify the proposal. So I think that's the decision that the board needs to make. And I think as a subcommittee, we can either lay out those issues and not make a recommendation, we can lay out the issues and make a recommendation, but I think we need to lay out the issues.
But before you get to that point, I disagree mm-hmm. with your characterization of it. This is not a with a loan option that the landowners have. As analyzed by the scientific team, you take either a 70 or an 80% change in stream width, mm-hmm. and then you go to a tributary. You also have a gradient restriction in there, and you also have an obstacle. So it's not just a width. It's not like the old default 2 feet and 20%. It's a combination of different things. So, but you keep saying it's a width. It's not the only criteria that's in there. Number one. Number two, it was analyzed by the scientific team, as I just brought up, and mm-hmm. it got the best accuracy ratings of all of those 15 different items that they analyzed.
But they didn't analyze it as a tributary junction because they said that's not how you
they
should do
it. They did analyze it as the ratio in combination with tributary junction, which is the way it was designed. That's what's in the chart, whether it's 70 or 80% then to the stream junction.
But that doesn't say anything about whether or not it was a trip junction. It just says a change in ratio.
The size PHB is listed as stream junction, comma, ratio 0.7, or stream junction, comma, ratio 0.8.
Those are two different documents.
It's in the table on the final report. I mean, this is the table on the final report.
So if I hear you correctly, your concern with stream junction is the opportunity to miss fish.
Well, and so the science team itself said, I mean, it's in the report and we had them do a follow-up literature review, and they said they don't recommend using a stream junction as a PHB. They gave us that recommendation. So I hear what you're saying, but I'm a little bit confused then about what we do.
Well, and maybe I misheard. When I think it was the last meeting or two meetings ago when Brian was up there, like, and we were pushing on the clarity, I thought I heard him say that it was always intended that the TRIBS would be a PHB.
Right.
Now, I think we're all struggling with how the actual proposal was written up, and then there was a jump until we had Brian in front of us to give us a little more clarity. And so we're struggling with that piece, but I hear what you're saying. I hear how, and again, I got to look at that again, how we think they analyzed that or not. But using the trip junctions as a PHB is problematic, from my perspective. I don't know how you would analyze, I mean, this is maybe where the technical folks can help us, like how do you analyze the risk to the false positives or negatives in this? And there's this seasonality piece, which I know Paula, you and I have both been bringing up.
Right, and I also hear you, Tom, when you said it's not a with only, it's in combination with the others, right. But the way that the EPAM is written, and the way that the rule is written, it's whichever of the three you encounter first.
And so then if you go to the TRIB once you encounter one of those.
No, I think if it's, so if we're going to implement the way you guys have articulated you want it to, you look at whether or not a trib junction has a reduction in size of 20, right?
Right.
And then if it is, like, that's a PHB, right? And then you start electrofishing above that, right? And so if that's the first PHB you encounter, then your width criteria, which is a reduction in width at a tributary junction, becomes the only one that's relevant, right? And so this combination, like having the combination across it, is if you encounter any of these first, and that's how the rule is written. So there's no, it's they're all ors, they're never ands. And I think that's the concern. Right.
Yes.
Right.
So,
at a trip, go ahead, please.
Plus, I keep hearing, I hear the apples to oranges as well, and on the fish management side, we deal with, you know, trying to do modeling and run reconstruction and all kinds of analysis, and you do end up with outliers and different things along the way, and you have to figure out what to do with those so you can have an accurate comparison. So I'm also like to be able to compare oranges to oranges, and so the reason I had mentioned channel width was that if you eliminated channel width, and not just from the landowner proposal, but all three options, then I think you end up with the ability to do apples to apples or oranges to oranges. And keeping in mind, I'm not a technical person, but talking with our folks, they all include a width, some as so that's why I had suggested, well, let's just do away with that. If that's the outlier of the three, and then the analysis could move forward in an equal manner.
Well, we're going to have to figure out before we leave this subject, and it's been suggested what we report to the board, but we'll have to figure this out here shortly. We can't agree on, from what it sounds like, we can't agree on doing away with stream width.
Well, I think we'd be on pretty shaky footing saying we've got three options and one is fairly accurate, one is not as accurate, so let's take the accuracy part out of one so we can make them more equal. I mean, I think that's a bad idea, first of all. Secondly, we were charged with taking these options and looking at them to see if there's any way that we can combine or refine or study some more or do something else. I don't think we were expected to pick them apart and send them back. The landowners that, the one I'm familiar with, that put this together, you know, spent a lot of time and money, and it was analyzed by a scientific panel. So for us to go back and say, well, throw the width part out of it, I think would be a terrible mistake.
So the accuracy piece, it's not about accuracy on the ground. It's about accuracy of the remote analysis that would allow us to make a good decision, right?
Both. It's really both. The accuracy that I'm talking about that the science team was accuracy on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And I think the concern that I've had and what my understanding of what Jeff is articulating is that unless we can figure out a way to improve the accuracy of the remote analysis to find the 2 foot, then what we have is an analytical approach because you're using trip junctions and because there's a way to, find with basin size analysis a reduction of a certain percentage in size. So you can kind of get that, but you can't really get at the other ones. And so the board is going to be left with an analysis where there's big error bars and uncertainty on 2 of the options and smaller error bars on the other one.
Right.
And so if then the board is faced with making a decision that's unequal, because on the ground the other two might perform fine or better, or be better at protecting fish, even though they might cost a little bit more. And so it's kind of I think that my concern anyway is that it's an unfair way to present the results. And so it's nothing to do with who proposed the analysis or the content of it. It's just there's 3 options on the table, and now we're faced with this technical challenge of one being a little bit more, one, because of the way it's constructed, there's the potential to analyze it more accurately, and the other two, it's more difficult to analyze more accurately, and that is going to there's no way to avoid that biasing the decision-making process. And so we are trying to figure out a way, just from a technical analytical perspective, to have all the analyses be sort of on par from an accuracy perspective, so there's not this sort of built-in bias. So that's where I'm coming from.
But there is a way to fix that, and that's to take the 2 options that don't have as accurate a portrayal now and figure out how to get more accuracy to them. I mean, there are ways to do it, mm-hmm. but I mean, I think that would be a much more preferential way to go, is to say, what kind of work do we need to do with the anatomous floor option to get the type of accuracy that we feel comfortable with? What would that take? How much time? How much money? Who would do it? And look at it from that perspective. The same thing for the east side tribes option is, what would it take to get the same level of accuracy and precision mm-hmm. that option C has? Mm-hmm. I would rather go that route than to say, well, let's make option C less accurate so that it lines up better with the other two.
Yeah, I don't know that I would characterize it as making option C less accurate, because you're still looking at gradient and physical barriers.
Right. But it was analyzed by the science team as a function of all 3 of those things. And so you want to take one of the variables out. So to me, you're going to make it less accurate. There's no way around that.
Yeah, I don't know that I see that.
So maybe what we do, since this is taking a long time, is present this conundrum that we have. And maybe between now and the board meeting, can you, Mark, discuss with the analysts, do we have money to, how do we not have money to work with them? How is that possible that we don't have money to work with them when we know that we need them to support this?
Which analysts are you talking about?
The analysts that we used, that did the GIS work for the cost benefit.
We have a contract but no money.
No, there's 2 reasons. I need to be very clear here. Are you talking about the people that identified the PHPs?
No.
Okay, so the actual final analysis?
So the analysts that did the GIS work for the cost-benefit analysis, that's also going to serve as the basis for the CEQA, right? They're the ones that said you can't do it accurately.
No, that was the very first that was trying to locate the PHPs. So you're talking about the first. And we'd have to find money to and create a new contract. That contract expired.
Uh-huh.
So we'd have to find a new contract and rehire them.
So we were we not anticipating having to do that in the first place? Because we knew we were going to have this discussion, and we knew we were going to try to figure out what the discrepancy was with width, and that we may have to redo the analysis, right?
Well, right now, as far as the width, we were looking to see if we could do it internally. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the results of that.
Mm-hmm.
We are openly exploring all the options, including if we could do the width internally. Change in gradient and the barrier is done.
Mm-hmm.
It was done the exact same way for all three options.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there you have your apples to apples. As far as a change in width, we were exploring whether we could do it within house or if we'd have to put together a new contract to have somebody do that.
Okay.
Now you've asked for an additional element today, which we have not even looked at.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of asking me an impossible question to answer.
Mm.
We'd have to see if we could do it internally. If we can't, then yes, we're going to have to find money and put together a contract.
So, and that last question you were referring to was whether or not there's a way to improve the accuracy of the 2-foot bankful width from a remote sensing perspective.
That's correct. And I don't know the answer. It may be easier, it may be harder. I don't know. We haven't looked at it yet.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting internally and seeing what we can do. And then based on how well they're able to locate this, then we'll decide whether we need to put forth a contract
mm-hmm.
and have that. It would be for the exact same strings already analyzed, because that way we could use the existing PHPs for change of gradient and barriers.
So internally, your folks have clarity on how option C was analyzed in regards to width.
We are going on what was presented to us 2 meetings ago.
Okay.
Where we were told that it was a comparison of basin size and precipitation.
Okay.
Using modeling. And then not actual seeing of the width, but looking at our slope.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and so you're referring to the way that the landowner's contractor did it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we were told they did.
So yes.
Just what we heard in the presentation.
So, can you, at least with internal staff, find out if it's possible to improve the width accuracy on the 2-foot bankful width options between now and the board meeting?
Yeah, we can look into it. I don't know the answer.
Right.
We'll initiate a conversation.
Okay.
I don't want to give any sort of no.
Yeah.
But I think Paula just said, is it possible to?
Right. I mean, so in terms of recommendations, one recommendation would be, as Board Member Nelson articulated, looking into what it would take to improve the accuracy on the width PHB for the other 2 options. So that's one recommendation. To me, a second recommendation would be taking a look at the implication of using the stream junction as a PHB in alternative C, given what the science team recommended to not do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so given that that's now what we understand how option C is constructed, then I think we just have to make a decision. This is like, okay, even though the tech team recommended not doing that, it's the option that the landowners are putting forward. It's what they've articulated, and so it gets analyzed, because that was the premise of adopting option C, was this is what the landowners recommended. So I think the board should decide in August, do we move forward with that, or do we need to relook at the implications of how it's constructed? The full board might just say, we already adopted this. We already said we were going to do what the landowners asked. And so that's how we move forward. Or we say, based on this based on what the tech team report said, we're not sure that this option, we need to take a second look at this because we're not sure that this option, you know, meets the goals of the rulemaking. And so I think it needs to be, rather than us saying, we have a recommendation on that, I think that the issue just needs to be rediscussed, and then we either reaffirm our prior decision, even including the new information, or we say, based on this, our this increased understanding of what was intended, or clarity that should have been there in the first place, depending on your perspective, we as the full board are proposing to modify the option. So I think that there needs to be a discussion of that so everyone understands what the option is and what the implications are. And it might well be that everybody says, this is what we said we were going to do, so we're going to move forward with it, and then we just analyze the implications on the back end, and the, on the environmental analysis and the cost-benefit analysis.
Between now and the board meeting, can you send me, I keep hearing this language that the science team said it's not a good idea to use the tributaries. Can you show me that language so that I can see exactly what they said? I don't have a copy here, and it's buried somewhere in my office. But I don't remember that, so that's why I'm getting that.
Yeah, I do want to take a look at the port language you all are citing to, because it is.
Yep. So I think it'd be good if you could just keystroke send it to all of us, and that way have a look.
Make sure we're comparing apples to apples.
Yep. All right. Well, good discussion here. Not much proof to bear, but anything else that I think that you think that we should discuss on this topic?
Maybe not associated with width, but one thing I think Tom and I. One thing I think Tom and I agreed on
here he comes.
Is that when people are making changes to the water typing, that maybe I don't know where you are on this, but it seems to me if you're making a change to the water typing, what I learned a little bit is that there's water typing happening under FPAs that aren't updating the system, and I think that's problematic. Right. And so I don't know where people are, if we voted on it, but I'd like to make a recommendation to the full board that when people are changing the water typing system, that the system is updated and accurate.
Especially since when they're doing the water type mod forms, they're using things like channel width, gradient, and flow from the basin, things that are kind of similar to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I agree with you. The whole system should be updated when changes are made. I remember the report out where it kind of depends on who the district, you know, who's running the district, whether that gets entered in the system or not. That's definitely a flaw.
Paula has a language that was written by the scientific team, is that right?
Yeah, this, do you have the report?
It's page 5. I read it.
Well, no, this is different. It's towards the end in the recommendations, and I have a draft, not quite the final. So it's not the right page number. I'll read the sentence, and he can find the page number. But it's in the recommendation section on how to implement their recommendations. So it's towards the end, and it's after table 6. It was table 6 in this one anyway. But the language says changes in stream gradient and bank full channel width decrease should be measured over a distance of 20 times the average bank full width. Tributaries of type F waters. Laterals. The PHB criteria, all of them, would start at the most downstream end of the tributary, and changes associated with the PHB criteria would be measured at or upstream from that location. So it means you treat the, you don't treat the junction as a PHB itself. You start at the junction and look for a PHB going upstream from there. So that's what they intended.
That's page 37.
Page 37.
In the final report?
I have the July 26, 2017 cover page, and that is on page 13. Here.
Yeah.
And so this, I think, was presented to us.
Okay. Page 13 from the 7/26/17. Okay, thanks.
And I don't know if this is the final or not.
The final was in January of 18.
So the board asked the panel to add the supporting science and recommendations for the TRIBs to be submitted to the board for their November of 18 meeting. So there was an amendment to add the recommendations regarding TRIBs and the supporting science.
And that was later. And so that's after this. That was, right. There was another full report, right? And then there was a majority report, and then Brian put his minority report in about why this sentence was important. So there was a whole other, like several pages of literature review that said to back up this recommendation, and then there was another opinion that said there was a different view.
Yeah.
We'll find the final report, give the page and the quote to the committee.
Okay, thank
Thanks.
You.
But to me, this is elementary, but to me, it's potential habitat break, not a habitat break at that stream junction. It doesn't say it is a habitat break. It's a potential habitat break.
Challenge with that, as we run into the tributaries, when we talk seasonality, you go to a PHB on a trib, you shock above that, you don't find fish, because fish may not use it at the time of the shocking season, but they may use it other times of the year. And that's some of that risk I heard you talking about, Paula.
Don't your shocking protocols take into account seasonality?
No, there's a window.
I mean, the tribes and the contractors that we use up there, they have sets. Where is it? And then, that should be shot this time of year. So
I don't know that's standard practice across every landowner.
Okay. Well, I think we need to move the agenda here. We've wrestled with this quite a while. And
this is for the next topic, isn't it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Pretty mad.
So we have... if I'm not mistaken, public comment on the Andratamus fish floor. And then we'll take it up after we have our public comment. Okay. So we have Jim Peters up. And Jim, you need the computer or... So if you could come up here, that way folks could hear better. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jim Peters, Northwest Indian Fish Commission, representing the Western Washington Tribe. Also, I'm a Squaxin Island tribal member. The reason why I mentioned that to you today is the Squaxin Island Tribe is having their first salmon ceremony on Friday, and everybody in the audience and around the table here are welcome to come. It's at Arcadia Point at the end of Lynch Road down there. And it starts, well, I'll be there bright and early, but it'll start right around noon. So the reason why I bring that up is our family has traditionally did salmon bakes for our tribes on traditional sticks and things like that. And we've been doing that for our first salmon ceremony when we first started doing this back in the late 70s and stuff. And part of that was to reach out to the local community, and we open it up to the communities to educate them on that, you know, fish isn't just a commercial type of commodity. This is a part of our life. This is how we celebrate the first salmon that's returning to the area. And we bring up witnesses, and their job is to go back and tell the story of what they saw that day. We feed everybody. It's a great time. One of the concerns that the tribes, and not just the Squaxin tribes, but all the tribes have, is our first salmon ceremonies are being put off. We used to have our first salmon ceremony right around July 15th or so, and it's usually well before August even starts. But because of timing of fish returns, the climate change, and things like that, we have it more into the first week of August now. A couple years ago, though, we got when we have to purchase a lot of fish to feed everybody that's coming. So, but a couple years ago, it wasn't until 9 o'clock in the morning of the day of our first salmon ceremony that we actually caught our first salmon. And so that was a little nerve-wracking, but and when we first started, you know, doing our first salmon ceremony, we were catching hundreds of fish in that early time frame. And so this is why this is a concern of the tribes, not just for our ceremonies and our culture and the way of life, but it's about you know, preserving those fish and making sure that our young kids have the opportunity to be able to fish and harvest salmon in the traditional ways that we did in traditional times. So this is why this is important, and I know you guys have a tough job here trying to figure out, but the tribes are concerned about the length of time that these discussions are going to take. And so that's why one of the reasons why we presented our proposal for the Najimis floor and then the process. And I think later on after public testimony, we might be able to give you a report on what that small group came up. Ash will be doing most of that report, mainly because I was in and out of that meeting because of other things that were going on that day. So once again, I know you guys have a tough job here. Sorry that we at policy wasn't able to resolve it at our level. I'm hoping in the future we are able to be more functional and bring you guys recommendations to go forward on some of this. And so I just want to say this is important to us that we don't have a lot of time to come up with a decision with this individual rule. We need to do something sooner than later because every year we go by, we're seeing less fish out there and less fish returning. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Darren Kramer.
A couple of things about the last conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Got to speak up.
All right. Wasn't sure what you were going to cover under the first topic, so wanted to listen in first. So there were a number of things, comments that I heard that were quite disturbing to me. I kept hearing things about apples to oranges and how you want to compare like alternatives. Well, that's not the point of an alternatives analysis. You want to have different alternatives to compare. The science panel came up with, I think, over a dozen alternatives in each report. Two of the three that the board adopted came directly from those reports, verbatim. So don't fool yourself into thinking that for some reason the science panel didn't come up with those alternatives. They did. We chose the one that we thought performed the best. I heard the term accuracy thrown around a lot as well. Yet, there doesn't appear to be a lot of context around that. What is accuracy? The board hasn't had an in-depth conversation about that for 4 years, in my read of the minutes from all the meetings on this topic. I think it's long overdue for a refresh. What is accuracy as it applies to the water typing system? There's a long history on this that has been forgotten, I think. Accuracy needs to apply to the rulemaking analysis, and it needs to apply to operational work in the field. And that has to be laid down and be clear to everybody, or we're going to continue to spin on trying to figure out what's the right way to go with this. So I think some conversation at the board level on this idea of accuracy is a worthy effort. I want to clarify how our alternative that we submitted was intended to work, because I think there continues to be confusion about that. Even though you have a written copy in your record, it was submitted in February of 18, we have resubmitted it multiple times, yet there continues to be confusion about how it functions. We proposed an anadromous fish floor. We proposed that as being known distribution based on map data that's out there today, along with a PHB option that ignores the size criteria at tributary junctions. So you skip over that and you go to the next one. The obstacle and gradient criteria are the same within the anadromous floor. Once you're outside the anadromous floor, the size criteria does apply at tributary junctions, as well as the obstacle and gradient criteria. And we chose changes, which can be measured both spatially and in the field. Thresholds don't work. They're hard to identify, particularly in the field. There are a few folks from the technical group that went out and test drove a bunch of these criteria, found that out. That's why we chose a change, and a change in enough magnitude that you could identify spatially. So that's how the alternative works that we submitted. So I want to make sure everybody understands that. If that's not clear, then it's very helpful to look at this visually, and that's another thing that I recommend. The board has not seen any visual representation of these alternatives and how they perform. That's very useful in selecting an alternative. Once again, you need to define what accuracy is. How are you going to assess performance if you don't know what accuracy is, or if you have different interpretations of what accuracy is, which is what I'm hearing? We've developed a platform, and this has been said repeatedly as well. We have developed a platform by which multiple criteria can be assessed, and you can do it real time right in front of you and watch it on the screen and see how it performs. That is available. And I would offer that to anybody and everybody, particularly the board, if they want to see it. It's a very useful tool and something that is necessary to support a rulemaking. One last thing. I heard Jeff mention the default physical criteria. And that was a negotiated agreement, but it was intended to be a stopgap. It was never intended to be permanent. I think that's something that's also useful to remember.
Can I ask you a question on your last comment? So, and I want you to correct me, Mark, if I'm wrong. My understanding, though, is that the draft rule language that we have before us makes default physicals permanent, a permanent feature.
That would be one read of it, yes.
Okay.
But when those were put in place in, probably Dave, Jeff, thank you.
Yeah. Kind of in the 90s.
It was intended to be a short-term measure.
Until there was research.
Yeah.
We were contemplating research, but we don't know what fit in our schedule, right?
Yeah. So policy has promoted there's been a default physicals to remain as the rule they are.
Okay.
And echoing, I think, what Chris said, this is down the road a little ways, but being clear with your folks that have to do this work about what their role is. And if that work is going back into the adaptive management program, be clear with them about that. And where is it starting? You have these three draft study designs at different phases, but all of them have skipped over most of the process that Chris and his folks are used to working in. And so being clear with what your expectation is, it prevents them from spinning their wheels and debating about it. Again, I recommend don't starting any of that work until we get clarity on what the performance target is, what's accuracy, what are we trying to achieve. Otherwise, you're going to spend millions of dollars and still come here and have this. Thank you.
Any other questions for Darren? Thank you.
Thank you.
Ash Lobach.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Ash Rohrbach, the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, representing the Western Washington tribes. I'm here to do a couple of things. One of them is at the last board meeting, the subcommittee's meeting, board member Nelson requested that the data that we used for the anadromous floor analysis we presented at the last meeting also look at how those line up with the some of the DNR's water type modification form results. And so that's what this map is that you have in front of you. I apologize, it's not as polished as it might be. It's just still, you know, we're kind of doing a quick turnaround on this. But I just wanted to illustrate what some of these points are. This is just the visual representation of it. And you'll see there are three, this is the Skagit and Sandwich basins again, three color lines around this map. One is red, blue, and yellow. So the red line represents the anadromous floor as defined by the 10% gradient threshold. Again, this is a GIS exercise, so there's a little, some imperfections. Again, it was a pretty fast turnaround. Some little bugs need to be worked out, but generally it illustrates, if you think of it as a bathtub ring, you know, that might be in the basin. And then the blue represents the 7% gradient threshold, and the yellow represents the 5% gradient threshold. The black dots represents the 526 FN breakpoints that are in the data set that was sent by DNR to Skagit. So just as a quick, you know, visual, you can see that, generally speaking, most of the these black points are going to be outside of these, of all three of these rings. Now, more specifically, is
the only yellow I see is this squiggly piece right down here where looks like Baker River goes up.
Yeah, there's some others down there. I mean, you can kind of see it a bit in here. It's hard to see. He varied the width of the lines just so you could help with differentiate them. But there should be there's some down here. You see, there's sort of like some glitches a little bit in the GIS, just in the visual representation. Okay. Gus, this is all information all right. that Gus produced.
This is the Skagit. Mm-hmm. This is the lavatory here coming in thing. Mm-hmm. So this all makes sense.
And so it is what it is. I mean, it needs a little bit more work, but this is just a visible representation. More, perhaps, interestingly, as far as what the number of water type modification points were observed above or below these various lines, again, the 526 points. And when looking at the 10% floor, anadromous floor gradient threshold, about 78 to 79% of the water type modification points were observed above that threshold point.
And so when you say water type modification points, you mean the type FN breaks decided through that process?
The approved process.
Right.
But these FN breaks for the water mods are for resident trout, they're not for anadromous fish.
That's right. It includes, it's blind to anadromous.
All fish, right?
All fish, yeah.
Yeah, all fish, so.
It may or may not be trout, it might be anadromous fish as well, but
right.
It's everything.
Right.
But in this case, in this drainage, I'd be hard-pressed to think of any of these that would be anadromous up there, but it's possible. But most of these are going to be for some other species of fish beyond the anadromous floor, which is what I would expect.
And also, these points may represent also barrier locations as well. We don't know. There's a lot of unknowns in this, but just sort of the raw numbers. And so when you're looking at the 7% floor, approximately 85% of the fish points were observed above, or the, I should say, I'm sorry, the FN break points were observed above, or placed above that 7% floor, and the 5%, about 90% of those FN breaks were placed above that grading threshold. So that's just following up on what Board Member Nelson requested. And it's still very preliminary, as I've said. Depending on what you decide here, maybe continue working on it, or we'll see how it goes moving forward. So that was the first thing. The second thing, and I don't know if you want me to talk about it now or at some future point in this meeting, but we had a meeting with the members or the stakeholders. We said we'd try to get together and work on the charter. And I can give you a summary.
Let's talk about it now.
Okay. So,
thank you, by the way, for that.
Yeah.
Thank us.
So we had a meeting. It was about 2.5 hour long meeting on July 24th. We had representatives from the DNR, small forest landowners, large forest landowners, tribes, and the conservation caucuses. So it's pretty good representation. I would characterize it as, I think it was generally a positive meeting. It was a lot of good conversations. Sort of a deja vu again for some of the old fish tag conversations we had a couple of years ago. But I think we moved incrementally a little bit forward. I would characterize it as more of a policy conversation than a technical conversation. There were a lot of, from the tribal side, a lot of technical people there, and they weren't really engaged as much, but I think it was useful for them to hear some of these issues that are sort of a policy, that are kind of holding up some of the technical conversations. I would still say that there are still some gaps in the agreement on how to move forward on this. I mean, we characterized the meeting as we sent it out, that the intention of the meeting was to determine if and how the adaptive management stakeholders can work together collaboratively to provide consensus data and potential recommendations to the Forest Practices Board and the subcommittee on an anadromous floor technical definition. So I think, like I said, there are some gaps, but there was some incremental movement forward. Much of the conversation, I think, really focused on trying to identify or articulate the problem statement. That spent probably at least half the time, maybe more, in various iterations. I think there was some consensus that we included a problem statement in our draft charter that we presented at the last meeting. But some of the feedback at this meeting, that there was a request that it be shorter and more concise, but conversely, that it also be a little bit broader in scope. As we wrote it, it was focused primarily on from a tribal perspective. And I think some of the other participants in there would like to see it also be broader and include their perspectives as well. Some of the elements that I think we agreed on as we worked on this problem statement is that, as we were to refine this, that I think there's agreement that we need data to support a decision on where to start the FAM for streams that currently do not have or have not yet been typed. I think there's a recognition we can reduce electrofishing where it is not necessary. That was another sort of problem. How do we reduce electrofishing in a way that protects habitat? So some of the sort of the contentious, I think, issues around the problem statements focused on this idea of presumption. Like one of the things I wrote down in the notes was, how can we identify that point in the stream below which we can reasonably presume fish habitat? And I think I think there was a recognition that we can all identify that on large streams we can presume fish habitat, and on low gradient streams we can presume fish habitat. It's just one of those interactions between the two. When it stops becoming fish habitat, I don't think there's agreement there.
Can you explain more what you mean by interaction between the two?
When you get narrower and higher gradient streams, at what point does that then stop becoming reasonable to presume fish habitat? And then there was this question about another point that we sort of argued around a little bit was, Are there, this idea that maybe this group should be looking at this question of, are there streams that are not currently being typed correctly? I mean, what is the problem here? I mean, is that what we're dealing with? Are streams not being typed correctly, and that's what the Inadequate Flow is there to address? And I think that was, there was pushback from that because there was concern that this is sort of out of scope and what this effort really is about. So that's some of the, that was some of the dynamics of the conversations, a little bit of background. I think there was a general consensus, you know, to keep working together. Got to work on the problem statement, refine it further, of course. We also agree that, you know, there's the anadromous zone, as described by the tribe, is very gradient-based, specifically or exclusively so. I think there's an agreement that as a technical effort working forward, it would be useful to look at other metrics as well, but not necessarily making an exclusive one versus the other, but be more inclusive in how we look at the different metrics. That was just the general gist of the meetings.
Thank you. Do you have another meeting scheduled?
Not yet. We were going to wait to see what the how this, where you guys wanted to go with this. I mean, we wanted to, I mean, I think we've probably been optimistic to get a charter ready for you guys to review and perhaps approve, but we weren't really able to do that, and so we just wanted to see what your guidance would be further to keep working on this.
From my perspective, I would feel great if you guys would schedule another meeting and continue. We seem to be floundering a little bit ourselves, so if you guys can give us any more information or any other ideas, I think that'd be great.
It seems like one of the other things we ran into with the technical folks getting together was a lack of board ownership or sponsorship of that effort, and so I think it might be important to get a charter done, and maybe a recommendation from this committee would be to the board to adopt the charter when it's done. Also, like reflecting on Jim's comment about the time too, and so I'm hoping that this isn't just a churn of disagreement. And then maybe doubling down on what I heard you say this morning, Paula, about when I walked away from the different presentations about the anadromous floor, I clearly saw that the tribes were measuring at one scale and using different methods than the landowners were, and my hope would be that this group, beyond a charter, would be able to figure out what those differences are and figure out how we might take a look at those in a similar fashion. And I'm saying that because it was like, hey, 5.3% is anadromous floor, and yet the tribal analysis was showing coho above 35%, right? And so maybe that's an anomaly, but it would be good for those efforts to be using similar methodology and criteria so that we're not stuck in this world, and then there's also this world.
Yeah.
Now how do we move forward?
And I think one of the I think sort of partway through the meeting, a good reminder came from one of the participants that we're kind of getting wrapped a little bit around the axle on stuff. The reminder that we're just trying to identify the floor. We're not trying to identify the habitat. And, so we're not, you know, that the whole habitat, having a model to identify habitat, that's the LIDAR-based model that's going to be moving forward. This is something different. So I think that was a helpful reminder, said, you know, it's not such a heavy lift to come up with something that represents only the base of the habitat, not the full extent of it. So.
Can I maybe throw one more thing in there?
Please.
I think it would be good potentially for the group to talk about, is that just this blanket and then within that floor there's no process to have people look at it and say, here's, I'm going to use the word off ramps, but I think if you were by human nature, you might look at that and go, oh, so anything below the floor or within the floor is off limits.
According to our the tribal one, it was, you know, we have the barrier, so if that's at some point below the gradient threshold, that would be off limits. be another co-equal sort of measure with the gradient threshold. As well as we've always, you know, had the ID team as part of this process. So that's always an offer at this point. Clear. I mean, if you look at our proposal originally, that's the first thing we said, that the ID team stays part of this process. It's not supplanted by this at all.
Mm-hmm. Please.
So just on that point, at the last meeting, I remember Jim coming up and articulating very clearly that the ID team can always be called, and it can be called under. So if a landowner wants an ID team and you're within the fish floor or the gradient floor, whatever it's decided, then it can be called, right? So I mean, there's that option is always there in the triangle proposal.
Yes.
So then the second thing, I appreciate you amplifying the point of making sure that the the way this is talked about, people are measuring it the same way. And I would like to add that, at least in the current draft rule language, there's a way to measure the gradient. And so I'm wondering if there's a problem with making sure everybody in their GIS analysis does the best approximation of measuring that gradient the way the draft rule language said. Or if, for some reason, people don't think that that's the right way to do it. And I think that language, again, came from the technical, like going over 20 bank full widths. Mm-hmm. I think that came from the technical team report. But that's, I mean, I can't emphasize enough how important it is, because when we're talking about a gradient and then people measure it a different way, and for instance, this is, I saw the same thing you did at the last presentation, landowners saying, oh, the gradient above, I mean, the gradient for finding fish is much lower and we're not finding fish above, say, a 5%, and you guys are saying, you know, we're finding fish above, you know, 15% or 20% or 30%, then it's like, well, what are people talking about? It completely obliterates the ability to have a meaningful conversation about it. And so, to me, that would be one of, like the first and most basic tasks is an agreement by which everybody's going to analyze the data, right? So, I mean, my understanding of the purpose of this group, as you've articulated it, is to make sure that there's consensus around the data used and possibly make a recommendation about either one or some options about what the what this fish floor should be. But, you know, being able to also have a consensus about this is the way we're going to analyze the data. Here's the data. Here's where it's coming from. Here's how we're going to analyze where that threshold number is, or where fish are found, you know, relative, or anadromous fish, whatever we're going to do with that, are found relative to the gradients we're talking about. If there's not a common approach to that analysis, then we're not going to be able to have a coherent policy discussion, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, the reach length is a technical question, I think. Mm-hmm. It's also a little bit of policy. I mean, you guys were spent a whole morning discussing width, mm-hmm. and recognizing that the science panel recommendation is to base something on 20 bank full widths. Mm-hmm. So for our analysis moving forward, I mean, when we did the initial analysis in Skagit, we just picked 30 meters because we know that estimating width using GIS tools, mm-hmm. is hard. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of like uncertainty around those numbers. So it's something that I think the technical people are going to have to roll up their sleeves and try to help figure out.
There's also going to be variability, and no matter what you do, if you remember Doug Martin's presentation on the intrinsic potential, there was a much different threshold between steelhead versus coho. And then to make it even more complicated, you're looking at you're looking at gradient for an index for anadromous fish, whereas some of these up here are going to be for resident trout, which are going to be totally different. A cutthroat's going to have a much different gradient restriction on it. So I think it's going to kind of depend upon, I still think that the anadromous floor or the anadromous zone is going to have to be considered somewhat separately from end of fish, no matter how you do it.
Yeah, start putting, that's the whole, it's the floor, not the ceiling, you know, to be sure. And it's And in the SCADA proposal, you know, we use just COHO. That was ours.
Right.
We just tried to standardize it. We thought it would be, I mean, Gus explained it mine. And also, just before I forget, I apologize, that the meeting also included, just for the record, Department of Fish and Wildlife representative as well. So, I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you. Jamie Glasgow. Then I'll go till noon, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Your boss.
You have to leave.
Yes.
Still doing.
I have till noon.
Yeah. Go for it, Jamie.
So we have some other work to do, but we want to hear from you.
I'll keep it short. First off, I got to thank Tom for using the word floundering the way you did, and if there's any other opportunity to work fish terms, it's like red herring,
right.
Anything else like that, let's keep that up. I do want to, we've been talking a lot about the science panel report today, which I also appreciate. In particular, test 15. And I want to make sure that we are all on the same page about what that test was looking at, because my understanding was a little bit different than yours, Tom. I was looking at the final report, but what I was seeing was a little different than what you were reading from, and I was wondering if either now or later you could send me what you've got, just so I can make sure I've got it correct in my head. Because it is important if that's one of the hurdles to this idea of dropping size-only criteria across the board. I want to make sure we're reading it correctly, and maybe even asking for clarification, at least from DNR, if not the panel itself, if we're not. I wanted to also follow up on what Ash just shared, preliminary results from some additional analyses in the SCAGIT looking at the distribution of FN breaks, approved mods, relative to the 5, 7, and 10% thresholds. It is, I think, a very, very good point that these locations of FN breaks for 78% of the points were actually upstream from the highest floor that we tested, the 10%. You correctly pointed out those may well be resident fish or some combination of resident and anadromous fish. But it does fit beautifully with what point I was trying to make at our last meeting, which I may not have hammered home, so I'm gonna try again. And that is, the way the anadromous fish floor is defined is it is to represent the threshold below which type F is presumed. And my point is, even if in some places 10% in some situations would overestimate habitat used by anadromous fish, based on these preliminary results and every other data set that we've looked at, including a lot of the PHB's panels data, were very likely to be within type F habitat. So as I like to simplify, even when we're wrong about the anadromous fish floor, which is still right, because there is no distinction between type F used by anadromy versus type F used by any other fish.
In the rule.
In the rule.
In law.
In law. It also bears reminding that the HCP applies to a number of fish which aren't anadromous, including resident fish. I think I'll just leave it at that.
Questions or comments? Thank you. We got just a half an hour to finish the project. So we need to have the next item agenda. Item on the agenda, which is
the report.
Fish floor, right?
Well, do we need to talk about next steps on the anadromous fish floor?
Yeah.
We're not done with that. Heard a recommendation.
All right.
But we haven't finalized what we want to do.
Let's talk about that, please. Comments? Go ahead.
So it sounds to me like there's a perceived potential for progress for that technical group to keep talking. They weren't able to come to full agreement, but I didn't hear Ash say it was a complete disaster and a waste of time and we shouldn't do it.
He's waiting for us.
Well, and I would also, with the chair's indulgence, if Jim or Darren or anybody else or Jamie, who was there, wants to say anything more about what they'd like to see happen or what they see the potential for that group is to come to consensus, you know, maybe we can take a few minutes sure. to hear that. But based on what I've heard so far, if someone wants to correct this, that's fine. That it's a good idea for people to keep working on this to help us, you know, at least come up with a technical understanding of what this concept could be and how to measure it, and a common metric and a common understanding. The original proposal included an agreement to look at data in a few other watersheds, which would give us more information. And then we've imposed, and we've heard from stakeholders, there's, especially tribes, that there's a desire to move ahead in a timely fashion. And so I'm wondering if, and there's the ownership issue that Jeff produced. So I wonder if we can provisionally, as this subcommittee anyway, bless the existence of this technical group with the request and expectation that they come to us with a charter and agreed upon, you know, set of tasks and sort of maybe timeline. If we don't have another meeting before the board meeting, but they feel like they can get together and get that done prior to the board meeting, I'm wondering if we can just have them make a recommendation to the entire board, you know, present to the entire board, and then the board as a whole can bless the existence and work instead of waiting for the interim step of us to recommend to the board. If they don't feel like they have enough time, then maybe we need to do that shortly after the August meeting. But I would like to see if that group feels like, hey, they can meet again and get that done before the 14th of August, and we could hear as an entire board their recommendation and make a decision. That would, I think, expedite the process some. So
when Don asked the question about another meeting, I assume that you're okay with them proceeding and continuing the conversation.
I agree with Paul. I was encouraged by the fact that a diverse group got together and they talked about other variables besides just the gradient. That's encouraging. I think we should, you know, however we do it, we don't have the authority to do certain things, but if they can come back to the board with a progress report, we can individually, if not as a group, chime in. And but I think we should reflect in our notes that we're encouraging them to continue to keep doing what they're doing.
You okay?
I agree.
All right. So we'll do that encouragement, and if it's all right, then we'll have them present to the board.
But it's still, I mean, this is still kind of a two-pronged problem we're wrestling with here. This is the anadromous floor for anadromous fish. That, to me, should be the easy part of this. The tough part is going to be the FM break, writing the rules. So, I mean, I think it's important because the board isn't going to understand this as well as we do because we've been going to these weekly meetings. But, you know, I'm just throwing that out. That this, to me, we ought to be able to at least solve this part of it.
Will that work, Mark?
I believe they may have to piggyback on this committee time to the board. But yeah, if if the committee is part of your report or your update to the board, wants to have the group come present, I think you can do that. Yeah. Right now the board meeting does not have that as an action item.
It could be part of our report. That's what I want to hear you say. That work?
I think when we formed this committee at the board, because I knew I was familiar with the, well, wasn't familiar with, but knew that this analysis had been done in Skagit and Samish, and then knew also that it could be replicated maybe in a few other watersheds. I also knew that that would take time. So I think we, at least I anticipated that probably being beyond doing that further analysis would probably be beyond the August meeting. So carrying on with that is, I think, we'll recommend for the board.
So, yes, I think you're spending time now to determine those elements that you want to bring forward to the board.
Correct.
And I would think you guys complete that, including this potential, and then you as the chair of the committee approach the board chair saying, here's what we want, and with an eye towards how much time you want at the board meeting. But I would recommend you go ahead and fully develop all of the elements you want to bring forward to the board and report, and then make the request.
Yeah, and I've thought about this quite a bit as far as the report to the board, and what I'd like to see as a report to the board, I will chair that report to the board, but I will be calling upon you folks to help me, because look, I can't articulate all that we've done here to the Forest Practices Board, and I think it's healthy for the participants to be able to actually help with that report.
And as Bob stated earlier, staff will, when you bring us the elements, staff will assemble a PowerPoint presentation for all of you folks to give to the board. So we'll put everything all, mm-hmm. It's something that could be sent out for your review, but we have staff to assemble the PowerPoint for you.
And we ask to have four committee meetings here, and I think we pushed that envelope pretty hard to have those four meetings, and we wanted to make sure that the agenda could be formed in the next 14 days to give the staff time to make sure that the preparation was done the way we are asking for it to be done. So, I'd entertain any ideas that you folks might have for the presentation that you'd like to see made to the board.
So before we jump into this, I want to say a couple more things about the technical committee. Mm-hmm. And so while there was, we heard some encouraging signs, and that's good, there's not agreement yet. And I also want to avoid this group being kind of a infinite location for continued dispute. And so I'm wondering if we can, at least acknowledge or put more of a formal condition or even sunset on it, that if the committee starts reporting that they've gone so far but can't seem to get over certain barriers, that they just report to us and then we disband it, and so it's not just another sort of ongoing place for disagreement. I would like to see that there's significant progress, that we, we get good information from them, that that informs the board, but we don't give them an infinite timeline, so the board just is waiting, or our subcommittee is just waiting and waiting and waiting for them to come back to us with recommendations, and that moves the timeline out for rulemaking. So it's one to somehow capture that we, expect a set of recommendations that is useful to us and useful to us to be able to move forward by the November board meeting.
For recommendations to them.
Yeah, and, you know, and we've talked about, I think we raised this, this got raised at the last meeting, you know, given at least these preliminary results from the Skagit and some other of the published data, like, I'm wondering about the timing of when DNR sort of restarts their analyses to be able to support rulemaking, and whether or not this analysis actually has to be complete, or whether or not in a relatively near future, whether it's this technical committee or it's our group that recommends to the board to say, regardless of what this technical committee finds, there's not going to be an anadromous floor that's outside of the range of the options that have already been proposed. And if that's the case, then assuming we get this WIC thing figured out, then DNR may continue with their analysis, maybe before all of their data analysis that you guys are going to do on the floor is done. You might be able to refine something that helps with final rulemaking, but as long as the options, as long as what we're going to propose is not going to be outside 5% at the low end and 10% at the high end, then I would think DNR could continue on with the analysis. I'm just trying to figure out a way not to have to wait until November to say, okay, DNR, this is the recommendations, now start your, all the stuff that you need to do, and we'll have to wait another 8 months before they're done, before we can file a CR-102. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Other comments?
Well, I understand the urgency, but we have to have some good data before we do this stuff. I'm not comfortable until I see a rationale for voting for something. So I hope they get it done, and I hope they get it done on schedule. But I'm leery about providing arbitrary deadlines. Get your data by this point, because sometimes you don't get good data that way. But we should encourage them to do the work and get it done in a timely fashion, because time is of the essence. I agree with that.
I think maybe the other part I was interpreting from your comments were, let's not have another beaker of conflict that sits and festers and isn't helping us move forward, either with the rulemaking or hopefully some of the progress we'll see coming out of the capacity building. I mean, for me, it's kind of like, okay, I heard a lot of the technical people say, hey, if you got us together, we can figure this out and bring you a solution. Right. This is kind of a test of that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, Paula said, if we can hammer out this stream width, you know, we're on the road to, making this a worthwhile endeavor for this committee. So how do we do that? You know, we just need to keep working on it, thinking about it.
Well, we made some recommendations, right? We're asking DNR for some information. We need to get some clarity. We need to all, I mean, it sounds like even amongst technical people, there's differences of interpretation of what the technical report says. Mm-hmm. So I think getting clarity on that, and you know, Darren's comments about making sure we understand what we are all talking, we're on the same page when we talk about accuracy, both for the analysis and for the on-the-ground implementation, and that's a well-made point, well-taken point, I should say. So, you know, there's some concrete steps that we can do between now and the board meeting, but there are issues that I think need to be laid out very clearly at that board meeting, and I think the full board needs to weigh in and make a decision about how to move forward on that. But I would really like us to be able to be set up to make that decision in August and not have to punt it down the road even further. And so assignment for DNR is helping us, you know, based on the discussion we had today, helping us get to a point where there can be a solid recommendation and an actual decision. No, there's not a decision point on the draft agenda at this point, but I think we actually do need to make a decision in August. So there's at least the chance that the analytical stuff to support rulemaking can restart sometime between August and November.
But just so everyone's clear, the board, the full board, has already recommended to analyze these three options mm-hmm. as presented.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're really talking about is modifying one of them, or the potential to modify one of them by removing the width. And I don't think that's what we're really wanting.
No, I wasn't making that final recommendation. It was just, I thought we need to lay out the issues that we discovered to the full board, and the board can say, you know, these options as already written are fine, and so DNR keep analyzing them, or they can say, no, the description of them is no longer accurate based on what was discovered during public testimony. Right? And so we had this discussion, I can't remember if it was our first subcommittee meeting or the second one, where the actual draft rule language does not describe what the landowners have asked for.
Right.
It doesn't. And so that needs to be changed. And so does the board need to make a motion to do that? Or since it's all draft rulemaking and you have a rulemaking committee, can you do that without us? But something needs to change in there, right? And then there's also this question, which is out there, and there's maybe a disagreement about the question, but, you know, since these are board options, we have to sort of look at this issue of trip junctions because there's a different understanding of it. And so just making sure the board is aware, the board may not change anything, right? But I think giving the blessing to DNR staff to continue with the analysis and to make sure that analysis is done in a way that doesn't recreate the same conflict and disagreements that have been done about the analysis so far. I mean, that's what we were tasked with, is to resolve the disagreement over the way the analysis was done on width. So I'm just expressing a desire for us to be able to actually do that at the August board meeting. So, because even just doing the GIS analysis, if it needs to be redone, that takes a lot of time. And then you've got a different set of inputs for the cost-benefit analysis and the CBOE.
While we're talking about the GIS analysis and the cost-benefit, I'm going to go back to Darren's comment about what is your definition of accuracy? What is your standard? What is your performance measure that you're going to do? At some point, DNR is either going to have to guess about this stuff, or we're going to have a discussion about how accurate and how do we measure the accuracy of both things like the GIS and the analysis, things like the economic analysis. We're going to have some finite numbers put to these things at some point. And I think that's probably something we should at least put forward to the full board, that we don't have any answers, but we did have this topic come up and something we're going to have to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would also maybe make a request of our legal counsel, because there's APA requirements, right? And there's always limits to when you're doing an analysis of rulemaking, and that involves a spatial analysis. There are limits to the accuracy from the perspective of how what's the correspondence between what you're able to detect from remote sensing or from a GIS analysis versus what's actually going to happen on the ground. And that discrepancy, to me, is one aspect of accuracy. You know, there's the other aspect, I think, on the ground is, you know, how close to are you coming to actually finding the real break between, you know, F and N waters, right? That's the accuracy piece on the ground. But there's limits to the accuracy from the analytical documents, and what's our scope for making a decision based on those inaccuracies. And even estimates of those accuracies are going to be somewhat wrong. But I know in the preliminary cost-benefit analysis, there are estimates of accuracy. And option B, is option B the East Side Travel one?
Yeah.
So in that one, they say, like, you know, it was essentially a toss-up. We don't really know. We're not even really able to tell where the effing point is on the ground based on what we were given here. So that, like, we have this problem already of that option being really, really difficult to analyze. And so we don't really know what the implications are of it cost-wise or on the ground or what the implications are of fish. We just don't know based on the information we have. So we can't make a decision. I mean, or can we make a decision on it?
But that's a good point, because the East Side Tribes, we haven't even discussed yet, there was a lot of criticism when the science panel came out that they didn't use a large body of data that was appropriate on the east side. So, I mean, that, there's a point right there that you've got sketchy data that's a lot of it in one area and none over here, and yet there is some data that was not used. And so, I mean, that's a good point.
Well, I wanted to make sure that you know that if the board should choose to have us continue these discussions and work, and I won't be back here until after Labor Day, about a week or so, the second week of September, that I'd be available.
Between now and?
Well, I'll come to the board meeting on the 14th,
right.
But then after the board meeting on the 14th, I won't be available until second week of September.
Well, was it your intent to talk about the East Side, try to have another meeting and talk about the East Side one before the board meeting?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think we got enough on our plate right now.
Well, it's only a couple weeks. So.
Yeah. And we did say to Mark that we would, and DNR, that we would make sure that they had 12, 14 days to get some work done prior to the board meeting. So that's up to us to make sure that we have what we want to present to the board at that on the 14th. Mark's got a lot of things. Yeah.
On my 11th page.
Yeah.
Not big pages, but.
So I just think we just need to give the board a summary, and we all need to participate in that, and let them know that we're not in the game to give up. We're in the game to solve a problem if we can.
We're perched on floundering.
Well done.
Well, hey, you know, I feel like, well, gee, I don't understand a lot of this, and I'm not can't articulate a lot of the jargon I'm hearing here, but I'll tell you, I don't feel bad because you guys are as confused as I am as far as some of this problem looks.
Oh, fishing analogies.
But I think we just have to stick with it and see if there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. It's been 20 years. Anything else that comes to mind that we need to be talking about here before we adjourn this meeting in 7 minutes? Appreciate all your comments, everybody. Participation. It's not easy, as we all know. It won't be easy, but we'll get there. So, unless there's someone else that would like to chime in, I'll call the meeting adjourned.
Patricia wants something.
Do you want to look at some possible dates in September? Or not?
What's your pleasure?
Not.
Okay.
let's talk about it at the board meeting as a
group. How much lead time do you need?
As much
as I can. We'll find a place to meet.
Or maybe you can send out a doodle poll for some dates to the subcommittee for September, and then
for
we can just do it remotely.
Meetings?
Two meetings.
Two.
And we can cancel them if we don't need them, but
we'll need them.
the board might say, let's do it.
You guys are not out here.
Yeah, you're fired.
That's right.
Yeah, all right, so I will adjourn the meeting.
Oops, excuse me.
Hey, guys.